This is Icon Art Radio. I'm Bill Teeple. I'm here with Alan Cobb and Donna Colby. We're your co-hosts, and we have a guest today, Sonia Gunderson. Sonia put on a very successful fundraising film event for us last year, and we've asked her again to see what she can bring to us from the North Country, from the town of Iqaluit, which is the cultural center of the Inuit Empire, and she knows all of the creative people up there, and especially close with the film, the very creative filmmaking community. And we're going to have two more films, and we're going to show them on February 18th, 19th, 20th, and 21st. So tell us a little bit about the films. We're getting two more award-winning films. We're playing a film that's been around some years that won the Camre d'Or prize at Cannes and was quite a successful film back in, was it 2001?
Yes, 2001, 2002.
And then we're bringing Necessities of Life, which is a new film. Which is winning all kinds of awards and will be offered as the foreign language film for the Oscars.
Was offered this past year. It was actually shortlisted, so it made it to the top eight foreign films for an Oscar in 2009.
Okay. Well, tell us about these two films.
Okay. Well, it's interesting. Both films star the Inuit actor Natar Ungalik, who is a resident of Iqaluit. But the films are actually quite different. One of them was filmed by Zacharias Kunuk, who is a film director that's been based in Iqaluit, self-taught filmmaker, whose films have really kind of extended cinematography in a lot of different ways. His first feature film that came out was called The Fast Runner, and that's one of the two films we'll be showing during the Icon Benefit weekend. It's a real classic that, not only has won a lot of awards, but also reviewers in the New York Times and the Daily Telegraph in London and all these different publications really talked about it as really changing filmmaking. And it, even though it's a 1,000-year-old legend that's being told, that's a real epic, sort of a number of reviewers called it Homeric in proportions. Mm-hmm. It has everything from murder to revenge to redemption to, all kinds of things. I mean, you really feel like you've been on a journey with this film. But like other legends in the Inuit tradition, which is an oral tradition, it's really there to sort of teach young people, as it's passed down from generations, certain lessons about Inuit values and morals and so forth. So it's just an astonishing film that, when I've talked to people about their first viewing of the film, often people remember that as a kind of milestone in their lives, like, where were you when JFK died, or something. It's like, where were you when you first saw The Fast Runner? So it's very much from the inside of Inuit culture, done by amateur actors in this small Inuit community of Iqaluit, according to sort of a natural Inuit filmmaking tradition. The other film that we're showing is a more contemporary film, The Necessities of Life. And it actually was not made by Zacharias Kunuk. It was made by a French-Canadian filmmaker called Benoit Pilon. And it's his first feature film. And it stars Natar Ungalik, and parts of it were filmed around Iqaluit, but most of it was filmed in Quebec City. And the story of this is that in the 1950s, there was a tuberculosis epidemic throughout the Arctic, and TB like many other diseases, smallpox and so forth, were introduced to the North by outsiders coming in. And so this is the story of one Inuit hunter, whose name is Tivi, who contracts TB and is actually taken from his family in the North and sent south to a sanatorium in Quebec City for treatment. And the culture shock that he experiences there is just enormous. He arrives in caribou skin clothing and so forth and is put into this ward with all of these white people and with foods that are completely foreign, a language that's completely foreign, a whole lifestyle that he just can't relate to. And he sort of starts to spiral downward, and a very kind nurse there finds an Inuit child who's in another ward and transfers the child over. And so then he sort of starts to find some purpose in life again as he bonds with this child and starts to teach him Inuit traditions. So this film is a film that has won a number of awards. Actually, Natara Ungaluk won the Best Actor Award at the Canadian Genies, which is their version of the Oscars. And it's a wonderful film. It's a much more contemporary film that's much kind of more focused in its scope.
So I'll say that we're having a fundraiser for ICON, and the tickets will be $10. And this will be Thursday night. We're going to play
Fast Runner.
The 18th, we're going to do Fast Runner. And then on Friday night, the 19th, that will be the Midwest premiere. This film has, that you just described, The Necessities of Life, has actually only been shown once before in the United States, is that right? But because of that, we can't say the U.S. premiere. We'll say the Midwest premiere of this film. And then we will alternate. We'll have a matinee on Saturday. Wait, I'm confused. We'll do Fast Runner on Saturday night with a matinee of Necessities of Life in the afternoon.
Actually, it's the other way around. So we have
Sonia will tell us how it's actually
going to
be.
So we start. Yeah, it's confusing when you've got two films alternating. But Thursday night, the 18th, we've got Fast Runner, which is a long film. It's 3 hours, but the 3 hours will fly by. It's totally captivating.
And what did we decide? Are we doing
7 o'clock? For the Fast Runner. So the film Fast Runner, whenever that's showing, will be a half hour earlier than The Necessities of Life. So 7 o'clock on the 18th for the Fast Runner, the premiere of Necessities of Life on Friday night at 7:30. Then on Saturday, Saturday we're going to show a matinee of the Fast Runner at 1:30. And then we'll show Necessities of Life again that evening.
So I'm confused. We're doing Necessities of Life
two
evenings in a row. Okay, yeah. That was different than we had originally discussed, but I'm so happy that that's the way it turned out.
And then Sunday we're doing a matinee of Necessities of Life, and then that evening the Fast Runner again.
Okay.
So I was trying to minimize the evening showings of Fast Runner since it is a long film.
Okay, very good.
So, yeah, we're really pleased to be able to offer this at ICON because ICON is really the premier arts facility in this whole region and really deserves the support. And also it sort of highlights the range of things that ICON has to offer to the community. And I know last year we had people come from all over the state to see the film that we had, and I'm sure that will be the case again this year.
So we're really looking forward to it.
Yep.
So how has the success of these films affected the people in Igloolik? And, I mean, has it created a spark in their cultural community because these films have gotten the word, you know, more global exposure to their cultural values?
It's an interesting experience because we come from a culture that's so celebrity oriented. Mm-hmm. And so people would find that, you know, they were quite changed by that experience. I think in Igloolik, it's quite the opposite. You know, nobody, even so-called celebrities who come into the community that I've seen come there, they're not considered any differently than anyone else. So it's a very different thing. And I think, you know, Zacharias Kunuk's whole filmmaking endeavor really sprang from his desire to preserve Inuit culture and to document Inuit culture. And so even before this first feature film came out, he had many years of doing videos and so forth to document different aspects of Inuit culture, which has been changing and disappearing very quickly. And so even when he approaches a film like this, he does so with a great emphasis on authenticity.
We've only done about 130 shows, and so Bill still has a hard time remembering to turn off his cell phone. Hey, all right.
There, we got it.
You want to turn off the radio? Yeah.
It's amazing how impossible it is to just keep talking normally when that
happens.
It's a challenge. You know, it's like, yeah, you know it's going to stop at some point, and you know that we should just like keep on going.
Irrelevant,
but something
right.
happens
well,
in the mind.
The mad looking for the phone. I never get there until it's...
It's like a little live being that's calling you.
Right, right.
I don't worry about those things. There's so many other logistical disasters that I'm trying to make sure don't happen. That if someone walked into the room and started talking to us, it wouldn't... It seems that's just... It's just cinema verite, you know. We're just... We get what we get.
So where were we?
That doesn't... the filmmaker Zacharias
Kunuk.
Doesn't he look at filmmaking as a way of advancing like the traditional way of teaching, the oral tradition?
Yes, exactly. So he sees that as a continuation of that oral tradition. And really the Inuit have only had for about 100 years a written language. And that was introduced by missionaries who felt it was very important for them to read the Bible. So to date, I would say only 50% of the Inuit even write the language. Yeah. So the oral tradition carries on. And I think Zach thinks of his filmmaking as just, you know, sort of leapfrogging the whole written blip.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, that would make sense. So are they teaching filmmaking in schools there now because of this being a way to enhance their oral tradition, do you think?
Not in schools as much as, you know, many young people are involved in working with him. And, you know, he chooses all of his cast and crew from the community. And then he actually, for The Fast Runner, because that was on such a different scale than anything else he had done, they brought up some people to train them in photography and various aspects of production. So there definitely is a skill set that's been developed there in the community. Yeah. But the whole way that they go about filmmaking has to do with really making sure that it's very authentic. So, for instance, for The Fast Runner, they got together 8 different elders from the community to get their versions of this legend as it was passed down through their own families. And then from that, they wrote a script, which is needed for raising funding. And then they took the script back to the elders, and everything was done by consensus. So it's a very different approach than kind of the top-down, celebrity-oriented approach of Hollywood. There, even on the set, as they're filming, they're constantly checking with each other, and they have elders there sort of monitoring to make sure that every detail of the cultural aspects are authentic. Yeah. So there's never any sense, even with Natar, I mean, now he has starred in a number of films that we have a celebrity in the community, or Zach, who's, you know, by our standards, much more of a celebrity. He's been honored all over the world. He only has, I think, an 8th grade education, and he has doctorates, honorary doctorates from universities all over the world, and so forth. So,
how did he get started filmmaking?
He got started, he actually is, he and Natar both are very fine sculptors. And he was, they call themselves carvers, we call them sculptors from here. So he got this desire to perpetuate the culture through the storytelling technique. And what he noticed was that people were starting to watch television. And he said, we have to learn to tell our stories through that box. So he took some carvings down to Montreal, sold them, came back with a video camera, a VCR, and so forth, and just started filming everything. He would go out on hunting trips with hunters and film them. Actually, the Inuit family that I was living with up there, one night when I was there, they said, do you want to come see a video of us camping? And I said, sure. So I go in, and it was a video from the first year that Zach was doing this, where he, so it was like in 1983, and it showed the same incredible artistic eye that he has, even in these early scenes that he was doing of Inuit actually being out hunting and so forth, and it happened to be my family from 25 years before. So it was really quite remarkable to see that as a document of the family and of Zach's early work. Inuit are really known for being very astute observers. Their whole survival has depended on that. And so when you see his films, you see that eye that, that sees the landscape in great detail. And because the film was done in handheld video, it, even though it's a thousand-year-old legend, it has this feeling of intimacy. It almost has like a documentary feel to it. Mm. So you really feel like you're there, and it's a breathing culture.
It's interesting hearing about how his early experiments were, you know, shooting a hunting expedition or a camping trip or something. Because when I was young and I had some limited access to a 16-millimeter movie camera, I wanted to, I mean, when you were describing that, actually, I remembered some old films, now long gone, that I had made of my family doing their thing. And this was on an island up in Maine where we went in the summertime. It was off the grid. And, you know, my dad and his brothers were always in work clothes, fixing something or building a cabin or painting a cabin or redoing a roof or something. And I was never able to do any kind of interesting documenting. I mean, that's what I wanted to do. It's sort of the natural thing to shoot when you're a kid, is the things that people are doing around you. But everybody was so camera shy that I'd walk into the room and they'd say, is that thing on? And that would be the, you know, the response. And the same thing happened 25 years later when I went there with a video camera and I thought, well, this is great. I'll get some shots of my mother while she's still with us, sitting at the table in the big, you know, in the great room and all this stuff. But I got the same reaction. Is that on? Or my brother, you'd see, I've got this video of my brother looking, peering at the camera and hunched over and looking very, you know, frowned and scrunched up. He's trying to decide if the red light on the top of the camera is on or not, because he's going to modify his behavior if
exactly.
It's on, you know. And so I couldn't do that. And it's interesting that these people, I mean, we hear stories about people new to cameras and video kind of technology being very opposed to it or humiliated or intimidated or, and, you know, irritated or something. But it's interesting that they seem to have not minded in the slightest that people are recording their natural behavior. There's a lack of self-consciousness, I guess, that must be there.
That's a wonderful point, yeah. And that's what I noticed actually living up in the community. I mean, certainly Zach is an insider. People are used to him being every place with a camera. Mm-hmm. And you would see that at any kind of event or meeting that was taking place mm-hmm. where he was just there quietly documenting the whole thing.
And they were able to ignore it.
Yeah, They just ignore it. And they're very natural actors. Yeah. Actually,
interesting element.
Madeleine Evelou, who was in the film we showed last year called Before Tomorrow, is in The Fast Runner as well. She sort of plays the grandmother and this elder who is almost totally silent through the whole movie and then has a very pivotal role right at the end. And it sort of turns the whole story. Mm-hmm. But yeah, people are very natural. It was funny when I was up there and Natar Ungalak was shooting The Necessities of Life. He was shooting it during the year that I was up there. So he would disappear for a while and then I'd run into him at the grocery store and so forth. And I started getting really concerned because he suddenly started looking not well. And I thought to myself, I didn't say it to him, but I wonder what's going on. Is he sick? Is he on drugs? You know, what's happening here? And then I realized after the film came out that he was actually losing weight because he was playing this man with TB.
Oh, interesting.
But, you know, he would go out and shoot for 2 months or something, then he'd come back, and it was just totally normal life.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It reminds me of a film that Louis Malle made, I think in the 1960s, in India, called Phantom India, a series of, I think, 5 films. And one of them, they were in Madras filming a school where they taught Indian dance to young women and men too, I think. But there's this one sequence, absolutely beautifully filmed, of these young women learning this dance. And Louis Malle is narrating this. And at one point he said, they were so natural, they completely ignored us there with all of our film equipment. And he said, it almost hurt our feelings. Because they weren't used to, you know, they were just used to being treated with more reverential or something behavior.
It's that ego that wants to be fed. And it's just, you know, in Inuit culture, wanting to be noticed or, you know, trying to exercise some authority over others or things like that is considered highly dysfunctional. Because the whole emphasis and structure of the society is in the direction of doing what's best for the group. And so to stand out from the group and to try to do something for individual gain or recognition is considered highly dysfunctional.
So is it very difficult, like you as a Westerner, because I would guess you, just knowing you, wouldn't have had trouble fitting into that way of thinking about life, but I could imagine there would be some Westerners who would go there and find it very difficult to adjust to that attitude. Did you ever see anything like that happening?
Lots of examples of that. And even from my standpoint, I had to learn that it's considered quite rude in Inuit culture to just go ask people questions. And when you go as a journalist, a list of questions. Yeah. So it was wonderful to be able to live there for a year and to just be able to sort of more quietly observe and, you know, allow things to unfold in a more natural way. But 2 cases of that. One, I was doing a story up there about a polar explorer named Will Steger. And one of the people who sort of hopped on to this big expedition that Will Steger was doing by dog sled around Baffin Island, he was doing that to interview Inuit about climate change. One of the people who kind of jumped onto that was Richard Branson, who is, you know, Sir Richard Branson, philanthropist, owner of Virgin Airways and many other different things. And he also is you know, known as quite an adventurer in different parts of the world. So this was to be another kind of feather in his cap that he was going on dog sleds with Inuit up in the Arctic and so forth. So I was I was flying up to Iqaluit, and I was in the airport in Iqaluit, which is the capital of Nunavut, this Inuit territory. And all the flights originate out of Iqaluit. So I'm waiting for my flight to Iqaluit, And the airport is filled with, you know, several hundred people. And over sort of the hum of conversation, I hear this person on the telephone, on the pay telephone, saying, "I'm not kidding, it's really cold here, and there are no trees." And, you know, sort of going on and on. And I look over, and there's this woman who was actually Richard Branson's assistant, who was standing there, and she had on her, like, you know, high fashion boots and all these different things. And you could tell she was just totally lost not to be able to have her cell phone with her and, you know, things like that. So I go out and get onto the airplane, and she comes on and she says to the stewardess, who is dressed like in a survival suit that's all padded, you know, it's not kind of the way that we're used to seeing stewardesses. She says, "I'm from Richard Branson's office," you know, sort of like, and the stewardess just looked at her blankly, you know? And so forth. So in several different communities, I was kind of following this expedition of Will Steger's, you know. So I would see this, like, Richard Branson arrived, you know, and the Inuit were just, you know, they weren't the least bit interested in him, you know, and he's not used to that. And finally, one of the Inuit kids came up to him, and she had asked her teacher, "Well, why are we having a community feast tonight?" And somebody said, "It's because Richard Branson is coming," and so forth. "And who's Richard Branson?" And the teacher said, "I don't know, he's a billionaire or something." So this child comes up to Richard Branson and says, "Oh, are you the billionaire?" Just like, you know, "Are you the one with green shoes?" So I think it was actually at first a little bit of a shock to him, and then a relief to him, not to have people fawning over him and all that kind of thing. So it's just not something that's part of the culture. And actually part of the lesson that is meant to come to young people from The Fast Runner is sort of what happens when one does something for personal gain versus for the good of the community.
You've been listening to Icon Art Radio, a production of Iowa Contemporary Art, Fairfield.